This great reality that is the essence of who we are, sometimes called enlightenment or awakening or liberation or whatever it might be called, I simply call being human. And being human in terms of taking it all the way as far as what human being means. And that human beingness is to rest as the ground of our being. Well, what can we say about the ground of our being? What can we absolutely say about that? What can we say definitively? What can we say what can we say that we can prove based on our own direct experience? All we can really prove based on our own direct experience is there is space, in other words, a basic space, and it is aware. That is primary in every perception. No matter what the perception is, that is primary. Basic space that is aware. If each of us just sit for a minute and say, I experience awareness, what we experience is basic space that is aware. That basic space that is aware before any label is added to it. So if we say, I am aware of space, or I am aware of a body, I am aware of a mind, I am aware of a thought, I am aware of a feeling. It's always awareness that is primary. If we say I am and aware, those are synonymous. So I am and awareness are synonymous. There's never been an individual I. So another way we could think about this, or imagine it, so to speak, is to have one of those imaginings that ends all imagination. And one of those imaginings that ends all imagination is to imagine pure space, to imagine the vast expanse of pure space, and then imagine taking parts of that space and forming it into the letters of the alphabet or characters of whatever your language happens to be. If we take pure space and fashion it into an alphabet and put the alphabet together in myriad ways, what do we still have? Pure space. It's all pure space. So no matter what the label is that we attribute to pure space, it is pure space. Anything that we fashion out of pure space remains pure space. So when it comes to considering ourselves to be anything other than that, most of us want to know, well, you know, if I am that, why am I not recognizing it all the time? Why am I not aware of it? And because I'm not aware of it, how can I recognize it? Well, first of all, we become unaware, or in other words, do not recognize our awareness, simply because we're constantly exposed to all kinds of influences, in other words, all these combinations of words made out of pure space, that suggests that we are other than what we are. So over and over and over again, there's the suggestion that we are other than what we are, that we are all the words that are fashioned out of pure space. And somehow, rather than recognizing that those words fashioned out of pure space are pure space, we give them a tangible identity. We say, no, they have an independent origin. They have a substance in and of themselves. And that substance is an object of my perception as an individual. To radically simplify the nature of our being is to say that all these words fashioned out of pure space, including I, are nothing more than points of view. They're nothing more than points of view of the awareness of basic space. So I is not a point of view we need to get rid of. It's simply a point of view. And it's just like any other point of view. It's not a repository for points of view. It isn't like the mainframe computer or master server of all points of view. It's just another point of view. The point of view I is when we are aware of it, and that's the only time. Even if we have an assumption that we're an I, that's only an assumption, and an assumption is only a point of view. So the more we keep it simple, totally simple, without oversimplifying it, the more we have direct access to who we are, the more we have the direct perception of the nature of our being. So, you know, this is within the realm of everyone. There's no special circumstance required to have it. You don't have to have your body rubbed a certain way. You don't have to shape your body into any kind of certain form. You don't have to sit and meditate for hours. You don't have to wear a special costume. You don't have to go to a special place like India. Awareness is everything. No matter what the words are that we fashion out of pure space, it is pure space. So no matter where we are, it is pure space. No matter what's going on apparently inside us or outside us, it's all pure space, and there is no inner or outer, though those are points of view too. So, you know, can we recognize that through intellectually understanding it and talking about it? We can to a degree. Through an intellectual understanding, we have an introduction to it as a possibility. But we cannot arrive at it through intellectual analysis. We can arrive at it only through uncontrived natural rest. And the arrival is not at a destination. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because awareness has no location. It's pervasive of everything. So we don't need to be in San Francisco. You know, I don't need to be at the Great Freedom Sanctuary in Bolinas or holed up in a cave somewhere. I can do all those things if I want to, but awareness is not dependent on anything. How could it be? There only is awareness, so what would it be dependent on? So the notion that there is any kind of ego or identity that has been fixated on or identified with is just a whole system of point of view entirely based on duality. It has nothing whatsoever to do with non-duality. If you hear the words introduced, ego, identity, psychology, any kind of fixed substance that is an I that needs to be purified, dissolved, done away with, then it's a dualistic teaching. It's as simple as that. So it's important to exercise discernment, the same kind of a discernment you would exercise if you bought anything. If you go to buy something that's valuable to you, say, you know, you want an MP3 player, and maybe you just don't want an MP3 player, you want a phone that's an MP3 player that shoots videos, takes stills, and, you know, that you can have as your best friend. Well, if you want something like that, you're going to make sure you find the best one available. You know, first of all, you're going to type everything you want into Google, and then you're going to string it along with compare at the end, so you'll get a search results from Google that compare what you want with everything else like it. You go out and you find exactly the one you want, and then you might call somebody about it, get more information, look up all the specs online. Then you're going to go to the store and you're going to check it out. You're going to actually try to use the thing to see if it works. You're going to find out what kind of customer service is available, what kind of warranty. That's discrimination. You're a discriminating buyer. You're using discernment when you go out to purchase this device. Well, you know, that pales in comparison to the most important reality of life. Now, maybe on your MP3 telephone, you can get a podcast of the satsang or something like that. You know, that'd be a good use of it. But, you know, the point is that when we're looking for something valuable, it's important to exercise discrimination and discernment. And so, you know, we want to make sure that when we're looking for complete freedom, we're placing ourselves in a circumstance where we'll get good customer service, so to speak. In other words, where there's a working device. And what does that mean in terms of satsang or an occasion like this? What it means is that people are actually waking up, not just a few people like the teacher and three other people in the entire history of the teaching, but, you know, many people, and not just a certain kind of person. So, you know, a certain kind of person who renounces everything in their life and sets themselves up in a special circumstance. But everyone, you know, equally available to everyone, no matter what the circumstance, equally available to everyone, no matter the level of intelligence. What is fundamental to us is not inaccessible like it is portrayed to be. If we think it is inaccessible, it's only because we've listened to a lot of the mental concepts of others that tell us it's inaccessible. Or, you know, we've been going to some kind of a teaching for years where we see only a few people wake up, or where enlightenment is the carrot, it's the gold ring, but, you know, nowhere that we look do we find anyone enlightened. I asked a person who was coming to satsang for about a year, I said, well, who's on the board of a famous meditation center in the United States? I said, well, you know, that, and their offering is enlightenment. I said, well, how many of the teachers at that center are enlightened? And he said, you know, that's a good question. I don't have any idea. You know, so I'm saying discernment and discrimination. Discernment and discrimination, the same kind that we would use whenever we avail ourselves of those things in life that are valuable to us. In other words, where we expend some of our resources expecting some kind of a return. You know, enlightenment can be talked about in a practical, mundane way. Why not? It's not some kind of magical mystery tour. It's totally basic to the reality of who everyone is. So let's get down to brass tacks, right? Let's look at it in the way we'd look at anything else as practical people. Let's address it as a simple human matter. And then, you know, When we want to buy something like this device I've been talking about, we don't want one of those devices. Like, first I was given one of these things. No one could figure out how to work it. We called in the technical experts, we called the customer support at the company, and no one could figure out how to work the thing. So, you know, that's what I call unworkability. We don't want a device like that. So, you know, finally we found the perfect device. It does everything we want except walk around and hook itself up to my collar. So, you know, this is a good thing. But, you know, it's similar when we avail ourselves, when we take our time, and probably our money too sometimes, and expend it for enlightenment, then we want to make sure we're going to get the result. And, you know, so these are questions for everyone to ask. I'm really suggesting that you do this if you're placing yourself in different circumstances. And, if you hear these things like you have an ego that you have to get rid of, or the I needs to be offed, or it's sort of, you know, like capital punishment for the notion of an I. But these are not teachings of non-duality. They are not teachings of non-duality, and they never have been. Any direct perception of mind teaching, what sometimes is called mind, what sometimes is called awareness, is direct perception with nothing else in the way. In other words, it approaches awareness through the language of awareness. It doesn't approach awareness through the language of point of view. Whenever awareness is approached through the language of point of view, it very rarely is realized. When primordial wisdom, the primordial wisdom of natural awareness that is already naturally occurring, is what's being spoken, thought about and activated in one's life, then it's very directly realized. So, you know, sometimes this kind of message is too much for people to bear because there's no doing involved. There's really no doing. All we rely on is resting naturally as the essence of our being. And if we're lucky, really, really lucky, we'll also feel devotion to that. If we're able to rest naturally as the essence of our being in the immediacy of every perception, that is a tremendous freedom. But if we also have devotion to that, the warmth of devotion that fills every essence of our being, that fills every single aspect of our life, we can't miss it. You know, so it's that simple. It's really that simple. If you want to believe anything else about it, you can. But if you want the direct route, the shortcut, you know, like that shortcut on your desktop where you go right to whatever you want, well, you know, this is it. This is really it. Last night I had a dream and I was in an airport and I was going up to the ticket counter, and there were all of these very busy ticket counters: Singapore Air, my personal favorite, Air France, Lufthansa, Air Malaysia, China Air, on and on and on. And then there was one ticket counter that was completely empty, and it was Air Awareness. Now, Air Awareness had some very interesting things going for it. First of all the tickets were free. The plane was royal blue, and all the hardware was solid gold. So, you know, like all the fittings on the seats, the door handles, the propellers, everything solid gold, all the tickets free. The entire plane was first class. And no matter how many people boarded the plane, it remained empty and spacious. So, you know, everyone wanted to be at these other ticket counters where everyone else was. But Air Awareness is always available. It's totally free. It's the direct route, you know, the golden, the easy way, royal blue, you know, the most royal of all approaches to living, the exalted way of being human, the epitome of whatever it means to be walking around in this form. So, you know, that's just the way it is. And so, you know, it's another way to illustrate this would be, say, you know, someone gave us a 100 carat diamond, and it was a flawless diamond. It was just like the most beautiful, startling, amazing thing you had ever seen in your life. And so you looked at it and you thought, wow, this is so incredible. This is my diamond, 100 carats. And then you said, well, I think I'll just take a quarter of a carat of it and return the rest. Well, you know, no one would do that. No one would do that. But this 100 carat diamond is the reality of our being. And the reality of realization, what's called self-realization, enlightenment, awakening, pure awareness, whatever you want to call it, is that this diamond that we're given when we're born, the quality of it, all of the facets of it, just become more and more obvious the longer we live. So realization is not a destination. Everyone is already realized. And once we allow ourselves to acknowledge that, in other words, pay attention to the true nature of our being, all these facets, these beautiful facets of the diamond, endlessly throughout our entire life, in every single millisecond, it becomes more obvious. So, you know, do we do this as some kind of personal accomplishment? Is this just another thing in our war chest of looking good? Well, no, you know, it's never going to come about in that way. We may be able to have some freedom from our points of view approaching it in that way. But when we use the secret key the secret key to the full evidence of enlightenment, it's guaranteed. So first of all, you know, we rest naturally. If we're really lucky, we feel devotion, immense devotion towards that. But even if we don't feel devotion, to many Westerners, devotion is reprehensible. So, you know, if we feel devotion, we're so blessed and lucky. But if we don't feel devotion, we can be willing to feel devotion. And if we aren't even willing to feel devotion, we can be willing to be willing. Do you see what I'm saying? Just in some way to allow that upsurge of warmth to occur, that initial warmth to occur. And then, you know, when we feel that, we have the beginning, the very beginning of being able to dedicate and devote our quest for the reality of who we are. In other words, this living as we really are in every moment, not a quest that has some attainment down the road, but the living of it right here, we can dedicate it to the complete enlightenment of everyone. So, you know, whenever we commit to being ourselves, we cannot possibly take it all the way unless we include the whole. Our pure awareness is the whole. So, you know, if we don't include the whole in our devotion and dedication to complete enlightenment, then we've left out part of the picture. So, you know, when we realize who we are in order that it benefit everyone, not benefit everyone in terms of making them a little happier by giving them an apple to eat or some clothes to wear or a roof over their head, that's all good too, but the true benefit of complete enlightenment out of which all of that flows. When humankind takes responsibility for itself as it is, humankind finds an underlying reality from which all these things are provided. You know, now for a lot of us, we think we have to work very hard to get food, shelter, clothes, all of that stuff. All the while, we have this immense reality that's beyond anything we could possibly imagine, out of which all of this flows. You know, all of this is our own manifestation. Our awareness is the root of everything. That means all of these things are already contained within awareness. They're already present, they're already accomplished, just like enlightenment is. Food for the world, clothes for the world, shelter for the world, no matter what it is. But we can't see any of this with eyes that only can see point of view. Can't see any of that. You know, the more we rest naturally, and everyone in this room already knows this, the more we find there's a reality we had never dreamt of. There's something going on that's much more profound, that's really deep and extraordinary beyond anything that could be conjured up with the magic wand of point of view. So, you know, this is the ticket that you don't pay for on air awareness. You know, no one has to pay for this. It's already present. It's not something that needs to be acquired like we'd acquire our electronic device that we value so much. Yeah, you know, who'd want just a quarter carat diamond? If the whole diamond was so readily available, and that every time you looked at it, you saw something new about it. Wow, that's immense. So, you know, when we couple resting as the ground of our being in each perception, and that means with each perception that comes up, rather than just seeing its label, we see its label and its true nature as awareness. And then when we see both aspects, we understand what's going on. It's that simple. Just because pure space has a label that's been fashioned out of pure space that says man, woman, boy, girl, old, young, whatever it is, it's all still pure space. So every perception that comes up, we recognize it as such. We don't need to have any special limitation or extreme that we adopt about it. We don't have to say, oh, that's entirely empty, it's an illusion, it's a dream. We can say it's like a dream. It's like a dream in that it's vividly apparent yet it has no underlying basis in and of itself. It has no isness of its own. So, you know, one way we could look at that is we could take a finger and we could try to find the fingerness in the finger. And so, you know, first we'd look at it and we'd say, well, you know, it has these little wrinkly things on here. And can we find fingerness in those wrinkly things? Well, no, we can't find fingerness there. We could peel the skin off and we could look at the skin, examine it in every conceivable way. Would we find fingerness there? No. We could take the bones and look at those, the actual structure of the finger. Would we find fingerness there? No. We could look at the cells and capillaries, the blood coursing through it, examine all of that in detail. Would we find the fingerness there? No. So, you know, what is there to label? We could look at the finger under an electron microscope and all we would see are the subatomic particles, and we could have everyone on Earth come and look at those subatomic particles and not one person would say that's a finger. And if they did, it would be a fluke, you know? So this thing, we can't find the fingerness anywhere because there's nothing to label. There's no thing to label. So this is another way we can use discernment in a very elementary way to look into the nature of things. And each perception is like this. We are never going to find the isness of whatever the label is in that word. So we can take the whole dictionary, no matter how large the dictionary may be, and no matter what the term is that's defined in the dictionary, its ultimate meaning is awareness. So every word in the dictionary, awareness. Awareness as awareness. And the dictionary to awareness. So whether it's the totality or a seeming part of the totality, it's all awareness. And this is what we realize more and more about when we simply rest naturally as the essence of our being in every moment. We free ourselves from the ordinary ways of perceiving, conceiving, being, and doing. We free ourselves entirely from that. We don't have to take up any position about it at all. It applies to the ordinary life of everyone, no matter what it is you're involved with. Are there any questions?
What is rest naturally?
Resting naturally is to just rest. Be totally at ease for short moments, repeated many times until it becomes totally natural, permanent, and automatic. What we can guarantee about resting naturally is that it's totally uncontrived. We don't try to string together a lot of moments resting naturally at first. We just rest naturally as often as we can, and as we do so, it naturally grows longer and longer each day.
No thought.
Pardon?
Does that make no thought?
It's rest in and as each perception. So when a perception comes up, you know, you can just sit right. What's your name?
John.
John. Hi, John. I'm Candace. Just sit, you know, and when your next perception comes up, your next point of view, whatever it is, just rest and notice that it vanishes naturally without a trace. There's nothing you need to do about it. It's liberated upon arising, totally free in its own place. You don't need to do anything about it. Just like a cloud disappearing in the sky. And as it disappears, just realize that all that's there is the vivid wakefulness, your vivid awareness as whatever is being perceived. So it's not awareness of an object, it's awareness as the perception itself. It might be awareness as the perception and then awareness as an interval between perceptions. and then another perception. But when you recognize that vivid wakefulness or vivid awareness as what is true in each perception, then you notice that the next perception that comes also arises as that and is freed as that. And then very quickly it's realized that the entire perception is that as well. So the arising, abiding, and being free to the perception are really simultaneous. But you see, we can't realize that as long as we have some fixed thing we're going for, like a meditative state of no thought, or a meditative state of focusing on something. Whether meditation includes an object or no object, it includes an object. It includes an object even if the object is objectlessness. Do you see what I mean? Whereas when we're free in each perception, we're free in all perceptions, no matter what they are. Then we're prepared for anything that comes up in life. Short moments many times until it becomes automatic. This morning I had an international conference call with all the great freedom teachers, and so, you know, we were really getting down to business on this matter of awareness here. And, you know, one of the things I said was, well, you know, really, and I've said this to many of you before, resting naturally isn't really even necessary. If you just have devotion, you know, like total devotion, heart-melting devotion, where you just feel and exude this tremendous warmth at all times, just the devotion of everything that is, then, you know, it comes alive. It automatically comes alive. So, but for a lot of people, it's difficult to feel devotion. So, you know, devotion, it's really the shortcut. It's the shortcut. And then I told a story on the call today. You know, I have a couple of good friends who were Dzogchen High Lamas. There are four Dzogchen High Lamas who are living today, and they're all very old. But anyway, one of the stories in Dzogchen, a lot of stories are passed down from generation to generation. So one of the stories is about a young devotee, disciple, student, practitioner of the Dzogchen approach, and he has been introduced to awareness. He really is feeling that all the time, and so he goes to he's not feeling that he's complete. He feels that something's missing, and he really wants to take it all the way, but he doesn't know how to do that. And then he hears about a lama who can help him. So, you know, he travels all over Tibet looking for this lama, and he finally finds her. So he finds the lama, and he sits down and he says, you know, I've heard about you, and I've heard that you can really help me take it all the way. He said, I know that I'm resting as awareness. I am awareness. I'm convinced of that. And I really want you to acknowledge me in some way, or let me know that I'm headed in the right direction. Well, she just sits there and looks at him, and she pretends like he isn't even there. You know? And he says, you know, come on, please, just in some way acknowledge me. At least let me know that you hear what I'm saying. So finally she goes like this, you know, she acknowledges him just a little bit. She can hear what he has to say. And then he says, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to enter my most pristine state of awareness, and I want you to tell me if that's it. So, you know, he sits there and he gets into his perfect Vajra position and all that, and settles into a state of awareness and looks at the lama and for acknowledgement, and she just goes... And so, you know, he does it again and again and again. He gets into an even better posture. His back is straighter. His head is cocked just right. His hands are in the right position, and his legs and feet too. And he's holding his breath the right way. And everything's just so correct. And he's settling into his perfect, fully evident, pure awareness. And then he looks at her and she goes. So, you know, no matter what he does, he just can't cook it up to get her acknowledgement. So finally he just breaks down. You know, he can't take it anymore. He feels like he can't do anything right. And he just breaks down into a state of total sobbing and prayer. You know, praying to everyone who has ever realized awareness, praying to this Lama who's sitting by him, and praying to the whole notion of realization of awareness with complete unimpeded devotion. And his devotion is so immense and overwhelming. The tears are streaming all over his body, and there's no point of view anywhere in sight. You know, he's forgotten all about the Lama and her acknowledgement. And all of a sudden he feels a tugging at his sleeve, you know, and there the Lama is, and she's going, yes, yes, that's it. So, you know, this is, it's so easy. We have all of this within us. There's nothing to be afraid of. Devotion isn't something to be afraid of. It really isn't. It's just, you know, when we're completely devoted to ourselves as wholly positive basic space, at first that might take the form of a teacher and teaching. The only way we can know it's true about us is if we see the evidence in another human being. When we see the evidence in another human being and they're constantly encouraging us without any of this other stuff about ego and that, then we know that just as that person is living as wholly positive body, speech, and mind, that we can too, and that it'll naturally come about. You know, in my own experience, this is all that's going on for me, like total devotion. I don't think, oh gee, I have a lot of devotion. It's just freewheeling, you know, it's just spewing all over the place. There's no way to hold it back because it's the essence of who we are. You know, there's no reason to try to keep a rein or a clamp on it. It's not something scary that can get us in trouble. It's like, you know, the life force. It's really the essence of our being. Who knows, maybe we could live 500 years. Anything is possible when we really realize the essence of our being. So, you know, if you feel devotion, that's really incredible. And if you don't, like I said, be willing to. And if you're not even willing, be willing to be willing. And, you know, most of us have been tremendously devoted to all kinds of things. So we really just transfer our devotion from a bunch of points of view to pure awareness. And when we do, it really opens up. You know, say we've really wanted to make a lot of money in life. We're devoted to that. We're devoted to it. We really pay attention to everything about money. We pay attention to how much we spend. We might write down everything we spend. We add it all up at the end of the month. We make a spreadsheet. We compare it to our cash flow and our annual budget and this, that, and the other thing. We make an investment here and there, and we don't put too much in high risk. And you know, so we look at all these things and great, that's devotion, you know, where every single detail, there's devotion to that detail. So if you think you aren't devotional, know that you already are. It's just that maybe your devotion's been channeled somewhere else. Or for some people, it might be other things like alcohol and drugs. A lot of times it's very easy for people who have been alcoholics and drug addicts to wake up, because alcoholics and drug addicts have a passion for getting out of point of view and will go to any lengths to just get in total oblivion, you know. And so when the alcohol and drugs aren't there anymore, there's still that impulse for freedom. Because see, when there's an impulse to get obliterated on alcohol and drugs, it's really an impulse for freedom. So, you know, it's a very strong impulse for freedom. So, you know, if that's been a problem for you or is now, know that that could be a plus. Because you have such a fever to not be involved in point of view. So, you know, when we've been really devoted to whatever it is, money, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is, and we take our focus off our devotion to that and just allow our natural devotion to settle in as the essence of our being, we find a great freedom, a great source of energy, an immense field of power, a field with no dimension, you know, the field of awareness. A timeless, spaceless dimension that is ourselves, that I call holy positive basic space, which is entirely aware. And we then can draw on this immense power that's always at our disposal. And this is a power of enormous potency and magnificence. So, you know, when we just settle in, rest, and all this through resting naturally, we find that our true freedom naturally emanates benefit. It naturally emanates benefit for ourselves and for everyone. And unless it emanates benefit, it isn't freedom. It just isn't, you know. And it isn't like, you know, some grandiose scheme of emanation of benefit for all galaxies, universes, and that. It may grow into that, but you know, the way where we see it is in our daily thing, you know, like being a Navy pilot or whatever it is. It's, you know, how we notice greater ease in our relations, the relationships in our everyday life. We notice greater ease in our family life with our girlfriend, boyfriend, husband, wife, partner of whatever kind. We notice greater ease with our children. We notice an ease that is a warmth and caring for everyone. And this just naturally unfolds all through natural rest. We don't have to try to muster up any of these qualities. All of these qualities are already present, and we tap into them through rest. It's just like, you know, where I live in a very small town on the ocean in California, and it's completely surrounded by conserved lands. So there's been no development there in 40 years, I think. And a very small part of the town has a water supply. A central water supply, but everyone else has a well. So, you know, we have all these different ways of finding out where the water is. Different people who can kind of know where the water is through their own powers, or some people come out with mechanical devices to see where the water is. But this is like our awareness. Once we find where that water is and we tap into it, it just gushes everywhere. So when I talk about this immense power and force that's at our disposal, it's just through resting naturally. We rest naturally, completely uncontrived, totally free in every perception. And as we do, this offering, the wellspring, just naturally pours forth. And it naturally creates greater ease in our lives, you know. It's always the case. Anyone who just comes here a few times, or even once for that matter, starts to recognize it. You know, just sitting here, I mean, really, who here is thinking about anything? What are you thinking about, Simon?
Thinking about the question that I'm going to ask when you stop.
When I stop blabbing, when will she shut up so I can say something? Oh no, that's quite all right. Well, you know, the point is that almost everyone who comes here spends most of the time they're here not thinking about anything. If you feel you're still thinking about stuff most of the time you're here. You're probably thinking about all kinds of stuff less. And or you're thinking about it in another way. So, you know, but you see, it is so simple that sometimes when we come to a place like this and we can't think about anything, maybe we walked in the room, and like the first time you came, you said to me, oh, you know, when I came in here today, I had all these problems, and now I really can't even remember what they were. Well, you know, that's a direct introduction to our own awareness. Our own awareness is totally spacious. The problems may still be there. However, we're not all wrapped up in them. We're free in the perception of them. So, you know, it's not some amazing thing. It's the ordinary essence of our being. So when we come to a place like this and we feel that settling where things just fall away or we feel a lot better, that's our own awareness. You know, it's not the circumstance that's doing anything. We've just given ourselves permission to be who we are. You know, I can't zap you, nor can anyone else. There's only awareness aware as itself, and that awareness is you. The embodiment of self-knowing awareness is you. So if you feel something here, it's you. You know, it's not me, and it's not the circumstance. What's true in that perception of well-being that you're having, or all points of view falling away, what is real in that is you, you know, your own awareness. After all, who's experiencing it? Awareness is primary in each perception, whether it's the perception of full-out freedom or the perception of wanting to murder someone. You know, it's awareness that's primary. Awareness is true in all perceptions. Simon, what you thinking about?
It's actually a good illustration of what, because the reason I kept thinking of it is because I tend to forget the question if I don't keep thinking of it. So anyway, you're talking about devotion, the more devotion and everything, the better off you are. And, but, you know, in my own case, this is something that I really want to accomplish. And so every time I try to rest naturally, I struggle with the notion of uncontrolled rest, because I'm sitting there going, I'm trying to rest because I really want to rest, but I can't.
Well, this is where, you know, it's important to just pay attention to what the teacher says in the teaching. Like here, not only do you hear me spout it off every day, but also it's all written down. You know, it's written down in the written teaching. We hand it out to you, and it's on the website. You can't miss it. So just follow exactly what it says. Even if you have a point of view about, am I resting? Is this uncontrived? No, that's a perception too, and just keep resting. You know, you're not getting into some state. Just your awareness of resting is awareness. You know, awareness is so present, so naturally present, so overt, so unable to be missed that sometimes it is missed. Just, you know, for a moment, consider it in just the most fundamental way. And the most fundamental way to consider it is just that you're aware of everything right here. So, you know, what's the constant in that? You can't really limit it in any way. You could say, I'm aware of that perception, or I'm aware of a bunch of perceptions at once, or whatever it is. But it's all awareness. So when we grow comfortable, more and more comfortable with awareness rather than all the labels of awareness, then we realize that all the labels of awareness are awareness too. But as long as we're caught up in the labels as being something, then that isn't the case. It's just, you know, like these things in our lives are awareness, the things that we don't like, or the things we do like, or the things we feel neutral about. if we have certain fears, like, oh, you know, fear of commitment, fear of abandonment, you know, fear of whatever it might be, that's the place to rest naturally, you know, that those difficult points of view are our perfect lover. But, you know, the moment we have something like that come up, you know, say we get together with somebody, and every time we get together, and all of us want to love and be loved, so we can't get away from that. We just do. It's part of what awareness is. It is what awareness is. So we have an urge to do that. We want to love and be loved. And then, you know, for some of us, we get into this situation and we think, oh, wow, this might be love at last. And right away, we feel whatever that is, fear of commitment, fear of abandonment, fear of suffocation, annihilation. Or, you know, we want it more than anything else and we just jump in head over heels. There are all kinds of approaches, as we know. Whatever that is, if we rest as that is occurring, we'll have a whole wonderland open up. A whole wonderland. But if, you know, we sort of fall in love, or most of us, we really fall in love when we fall in love. When we really fall in love, that's another example of being totally free. When we totally fall in love and allow ourselves to do that, and almost everyone's had the experience of that, we don't care about anything. You know, we're not worried about what our parents did to us when we were a kid. We're not worried about the job, or it's just love. You know, it's all love. Everyone looks good. Everyone at work looks good, even though they looked like a monster last week. And, you know, this is just the way it is. Well, you know, if we realized when we fall in love that that love is us, you know, the constant in that love is our own awareness. And in this incredible experience of getting together with another person, it opens up, self-knowing awareness opening up to itself. But, you know, if we then get a story going about that, we're going to make the other person responsible for our love that we're feeling. And then if anything comes up and that love feeling starts to slip away, if we're blaming the other person for being in love, then when it starts to slip away, we're going to blame them for not being in love. So you see what I'm saying here. The stories are endless. But if when we fall in love, we realize that that is us and it's the true nature of our being, it's always available, no one can ever give it to us or take it away, that's the only opportunity we ever have for really having a relationship. Any other relationship we might have is just kind of a pretend relationship. But the relationship that's based on this total willingness to love, which is, first of all, to rest as the love that we already are, awareness, or as some people in California call me, Candace Love Awareness, then we have an opportunity to be in love with whoever we partner up with, or, you know, and the totality. So, but you see, if we fall in love and then we feel, oh, fear, do I really want to be committed? Will they abandon me? Or this, that, or the other thing. We're starting to sow the seeds of a story. You know, all these points of view, we're sowing all these weeds into the fabric of what we've already realized about ourselves. So, you know, this rest, it delivers very practical results. Because if the fear of abandonment comes up, or commitment, or whatever it is, and we rest, we're going to see that fear, whatever it is, just vanish naturally. And the more we rest as that perception, the less of a grip it'll have, till it has no grip at all. So this is very practical. Or it might be the workplace. You know, maybe we're at work, and most people who work want to do better in their job than they're already doing, no matter how well they're doing their job. And we want to do a better job, but whenever we want to do a better job, all these things come up. Oh, you know, is the boss going to like what I'm doing? Or if we own our own business, is this going to make me as much money as I want to make this year? So if we get lost in all these stories about what the boss thinks or the money angle or whatever it is, then it's going to be very difficult for us to relax enough to succeed. But if these fears come up, and we all have them, fears or impulses come up, all points of view, we rest naturally as that perception. We'll find a whole new world of accomplishment within our work, whatever it is, or with our children, you know. So this is very practical. Say, you know, our kid drives us nuts in one certain area of life, and whenever that comes up, the kid does the same thing and we do the same thing over and over and over again, and no matter what we do, we can't stop. Well, if that comes up and we rest, you know, we find a whole new way of looking at it. And instead of just having this one option available that's a hair trigger reaction based on point of view, when we rest naturally, we have the options of the totality available to us, whether it's at our work, with our children, with our lover, whatever it is.
Is it failing to do the rest if you require exercise or bubble baths or a massage to help you get into the rest naturally?
Just rest while you're running that bubble bath, honey. You know? If you like luxury, great. Go for it. Just rest while you're luxuriating. I like nice things too. It's okay. Not at all. Not at all. You know, sometimes I might suggest to someone taking a bubble bath. I love bubble baths myself, if you must know, you know, so.
For instance, I can deal with so much more in my life when I exercise in the morning, which means being outside and walking 4 miles fast.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, I do that too.
And that's,
so yeah. That's a great time to rest. The rest... and exercise are synonymous. So rest and daily activities are synonymous, whatever it is that we're involved in. We don't need any special circumstance to rest, but maybe at first we might feel it's impossible to rest. Then we might run a bubble bath or whatever puts you at greater ease. Just get acquainted and comfortable with your own ease. Simon?
I have a particular thing that I can visualize, right? Whenever I visualize this thing, everything just seems really, really clear. Like I just go, oh yeah. And I just feel like everything that you're saying is about to just unravel when I just gotta get that. You know, everything just falls away and I just go, right, sweet, and I can rest. But then is that act of visualizing that thing completely visible?
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter what you're aware of. It's all awareness. But I will say that, you know, as we rest, then the nature of our thinking changes. You know, what we're thinking about changes. The actions of our body, our thinking, they just naturally become more sublime. You know, when we're not thinking about points of view all the time, then the thoughts that are bubbling are, you see, there's only ordinary body, speech, and mind based on point of view, or sublime body, speech, and mind, the sublime body, speech, and mind of awareness. But for most of us, it isn't like from jumping from one circle into another, ordinary into sublime. The sublime is in the ordinary. It's in that immediacy of perception. As we rest in the immediacy of perception, whatever it is, our thinking, our actions, our everything just become imbued with that. So instead of thinking about points of view and all our fears, fearful points of view, and trying to put together some good points of view, oh, like I can't wait for the weekend, then I'll really feel comfortable and free, or when I go on vacation, or whatever it is. When we're having a vacation in each perception, then you see, no matter what it is, it's free. And with that, we always, or almost always, feel some kind of urge to describe it, because it's so amazing. You know, so we might say, wow, you know, everything's fallen away, or gee, it's so spacious, or... You have something, Robbie?
Yes. I'd like some clarity. I don't have clarity about holy pure, you know, as opposed to, holy positive as opposed to neutral or negative. Why do we label non-existence as holy positive?
Oh, I love that question, Ravi.
You know, why not just accepting totality of the isness?
Uh-huh. Ravi asked, why do we label basic space as wholly positive? It's so simple. We label basic space as wholly positive because nothing else has ever been. Nothing else has ever been. So its original, fundamental, or primordial purity or wholly positive nature is all that is. Every single perception is that. But if we've taken ourselves to be a bunch of points of view, whatever they are, then usually we have our points of view categorized into points of view that are positive, points of view that are neutral, and points of view that are negative. All those positive, negative, and neutral points of view are all wholly positive basic space. But if we label them and attribute the quality of characteristic of being positive, neutral, or negative, then we're always going to be lost in a world of opposites, or neutrality, or impartiality. So we say that basic space is wholly positive or awareness is pure because it's never been anything other than that. It's just like pure space has never been anything other than pure space. We're not making a judgment about pure space versus impure space. It's just pure space and that it's never been anything other than pure space. The notion of impure has never occurred. But you know, if we don't realize it as it truly is, you know, this fundamental, wholly positive nature and essence of basic space, the basic space of awareness, then we only have a philosophy about something, you know, like thusness, isness, pure consciousness, but it doesn't have this amazing emanation of benefit. The wholly positive reality emanates benefit. That's its natural energy that's always occurring. We can have a philosophy about all kinds of things, but if we do, we'll be selling ourselves short. You know, someone before the meeting today was asking me about compassion. And I said, well, you know, compassion is naturally occurring. It's the emanation of benefit of pure awareness. So it's not something that needs to be cultivated or developed. If we're trying to be compassionate as an antidote to point of view, in other words, a point of view comes up and say we want to have a fight with our partner, and instead of having a fight with our partner, we say, oh no, I'm going to be compassionate to my partner and I'm going to lessen their suffering. That's an antidote. That's using compassion as an antidote, which is applying one point of view to another point of view. But when we rest naturally, we're naturally compassionate. So we don't have to apply any kind of antidote. So these are the distinctions in between naturally occurring compassion and compassion as a point of view. Also the distinction between wholly positive basic space and positive points of view. The wholly positive is naturally occurring. It doesn't need to be made positive. It's neither made nor unmade. There's no limitation that needs to be imposed on it. But, you know, we can get lost in all this rhetoric, but just let's just be sweet. It's so easy, it really is. There are a lot of young people in this room, but you know, some of us are old enough that we're sick of the rhetoric. Pardon? Yeah, really.
Well, the assumption over here is that I have to understand perfectly in order to get that.
Oh, that's, hey, you know, please, I'm very willing to answer all your questions. And I also see so clearly in you that your questions are heartfelt. They're not coming out of just an intellectual void. You know, they're very heartfelt, and that's obvious. Are there other questions?
Did you really have that dream?
I did. You know, see, this is... Oh, my dreams every single night are like that. You know, they're like allegories that I could never imagine sitting here. They're just like these tremendous allegories of awareness. Anyone who's been around me for a while, they have, you know, they've heard them all. They're amazing. It's like a wonderland. But, you know, this is the reality of our life. We don't have to try to put some kind of wonderland together, make life into a theme park. We're already just the theme park of awareness, you know. It's beyond any water slide, no matter how magnificent it is.
Have you always dreamed, or is this more recent?
The moment I was born, I started dreaming, you know, human form. All of it, we call it waking and dreaming and sleeping, but it's all like a dream. You know, it's just all like a dream. Everything is a perfect metaphor of awareness. Every perception is a beautiful allegory. If you don't dream and you rest naturally, you will dream. If you do dream and you rest naturally, the quality of your dreams will change. And not only will the quality of your dreams change, but also this awareness is pervasive of all states. So more and more you'll be aware 24/7. no matter, you know, what's going on, you'll be aware of deep sleep, aware as dreaming, aware as the waking dream too.
Is there any objection to practicing a specific time deliberately practicing resting, such as the equivalent of meditation, taking time to sit and practice resting for hours a day? Is that contrary to everything? I know you would say to keep returning and resting in all activities.
Mm-hmm.
Setting aside time to practice that.
It's not circumstance dependent. So if you want to meditate or not, whatever you feel moved towards, it's all good, you know, just rest. If you want to sit for hours a day or even 5 minutes while that's occurring, rest in the immediacy of whatever's going on. There'll be countless perceptions, I can guarantee you. Even if you enter some non-conceptual state, that too is a point of view. So, you know, what's aware of the non-conceptual state? So non-conceptual states aren't what we're going for. Freedom and immediate perception, whether it has concepts or not. For some of us who have meditated for years, when we reach a non-conceptual state, then we think, wow, I've got it, you know. I can prolong this non-conceptual state for a long time. But that isn't freedom. You know, that isn't freedom. Because then we'd have to ask, well, what's aware of the non-conceptual state? So why not? Rest is the basis of all perception, conceptual and non-conceptual.
And that would be the devotion that we're talking about. Hmm? That would be the devotion that we're resting with.
Well, yeah, you know, really, for any of us who want to take it all the way, devotion is required. There has to be devotion. Without devotion, there may be more freedom from points of view. But unless there is devotion, it's impossible to be totally free. Devotion is the quality of human existence. It's just an amazing quality of human existence. Human existence, yeah. Well, you know, before I had this incredible shift into the reality that was already there 24 years ago, I had tried so many things to be a good person and to try to marshal together some kind of a life that would be satisfying and fulfilling. But, you know, no matter what I did, it didn't work. And a lot of the things I did were beneficial. They were beneficial. But you see, my motivation for doing them wasn't clear. It was all based on point of view. Unless it's grounded in pure awareness, it comes from point of view. And so no matter how much I wanted to benefit the world in my young life or in the total of my life, it always felt short, and there was always this struggle, you know, this struggle of doing, what volunteer project to do next, how to think about it, how to argue with all the other people in the nonprofit or whatever it was. as these things go. So, you know, when the shift occurred for me, it was so amazing that this benefit just awakened. It was just absolutely present all the time. Immense benefit that is completely uncontrived and uncontained and unimpeded. You know, it couldn't be stopped even if I tried. Couldn't be started either. It's just present, you know, absolutely naturally present, naturally occurring. So, yeah, the devotion is like that too. It was like a switch that had been turned off and all of a sudden it was on. I would say I was quasi-devotional about all these matters all of my life. But when the switch is flipped, it's just there's no turning it off again. You know, the switch is on and there's no more switch. Devotion, benefit, compassion, always the case. And all from just simply resting in the essence of our being. Any other questions?